As the Taliban swept through Afghanistan in August last year, following the US military withdrawal, the collapse of President Ashraf Ghani's government was inevitable. Most of the former government's top officials, including Ghani himself, fled the country, triggering chaos and uncertainty among Afghans. But not all of them had the opportunity or the will to leave Kabul. Ghani's Deputy Minister of Finance, Nazir Kabiri, stayed home. The US-educated technocrat anticipated the financial challenges such a political change could bring to Afghanistan. And the Taliban kept Kabiri in his post. Will he succeed in his efforts to prevent a complete economic collapse? And as the Biden administration frees up $7 billion the Afghan central bank had in US banks, what's the plan moving forward? Afghanistan's Deputy Minister of Finance, Nazir Kabiri, talks to Al Jazeera. Nazir Kabiri, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera today. I want to start back in August when the Taliban took over. Where were you that day? Were you in Kabul?
I was in Kabul, in my office, when they came over to the ministry at 5:30 p.m. in the evening. And I handed them over the keys to the Ministry of Finance in Afghanistan.
You must have felt it was coming. We all knew that they were taking territory by territory, region by region. But, I mean, the speed and the extraordinary events of that day, tell me what it was like.
It was unpredictable, and that the Kabul administration evacuated in a very unprecedented manner. And that, I think, created some chaos. While the Taliban made it public earlier in the morning that they are not going to be entering the capital city, but the developments that day, that the president flee and the authorities left the country, I think led the Taliban to come over, and that they changed their announcement saying that now we're going to enter the city.
So in your department, in your building, they come in there, and are you sitting there thinking, do I need to get out? Or were you calm about it all? Did you think, actually, this will be okay, I'll keep my job? I can't imagine what it was like that day.
We have some 3,000 people working for us in the main offices in Kabul. And that almost everyone had left, including the women and rest of our employees. And that I had a responsibility as a caretaker. My minister had to leave a week before the collapse, and that the property, the systems, and the vehicles, everything. I was in charge, and I had to ensure that those are not being stolen, they are not being robbed, and that I also do a peaceful handover.
So how quickly did you know that you would be staying in your job? Or did you just always intend to stay in your job? I'm wondering, do the Taliban come in and say, Nazir, we want you to stay on, we want you to keep doing your job, or was it your decision?
Initially, it was the foot soldiers, and that's why it was dangerous to face them, and that the Ministry of Finance perceived an institution involving money and mismanagement historically. So that was dangerous. It was unpredictable. But later on, when the senior management came, and that I wrote them a letter, a handover note, and that they followed up on that, saying that we need you to come and explain this in a very plain manner, in a very public-friendly manner, so they understand. And that led to continuing, and that basically for me it was the realities, the figures and the numbers that I knew and how bad they were. Country was facing severe drought, displacement due to the intensified war, and the implications of the COVID, and that the great degree of aid dependency, which was simply unsustainable, and that I knew the chaos that might follow afterwards. And that the people will suffer. So those became some sort of motivations to risk it and to continue.
Motivation, this is what I was going to ask you about. The fact that you're probably sitting there thinking, I'm here to serve the country, and that has to come first. Even with all this political chaos and even with what people may think of the Taliban, you're thinking, I've got to look after my country here. Is that what was foremost in your mind?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I knew that economics must be delivered to the people and that we prevent and preserve whatever possible. Mm. And the absence of collapse of the international aid system overnight, and that the system belonged to the people. Ministry of Finance is a public institution. It existed for close to a century.
Mm.
And that the institutions, the banks, the private sector, the businesses, they all belong to the people of Afghanistan. And that regimes change, people change, politicians change. And that I, as a technocrat, I felt like it's my responsibility to ensure, to deliver and that retain some of those achievements and gains to reinstall the centralized revenue system, otherwise falling apart.
Yeah.
In the run-up to Taliban's taking over the country, the budget was in chaos. Half of our national budget disappeared overnight. Hundreds
define disappeared for me.
Afghanistan heavily relied on international aid. Last 2 years, we, with the international community, blame goes to the both parties. We built that system, which was simply unsustainable. 75% of the public expenditure in the country was paid by the international aid. And that simply was not sustainable. It was fragile. It was collapsing. And it did. And that the fallout, managing the consequence of those hundreds of thousands of contractors unpaid, salaries unpaid, projects half finished, 90% complete, unpaid. And those, I think, what happened to Afghanistan was extremely disappointing. It was unjust. Everyone turned their back at us. The international system, the international aid agencies, the developing institutions, overnight. And then followed with the sanctions. And that the poor, the people who lived there, they were already, even before the collapse of the previous regime, were extremely vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that half of the country were under the poverty line, and that the harsh winter was coming.
And then overnight it just gets all worse, just like that, just like that. You referred to yourself earlier as a technocrat. Can I read you a headline that I just picked here from the Washington Post? Afghanistan desperately needs aid. One technocrat from the former government is key to the Taliban's efforts. That's you. Did you feel pressure on you at that point to deliver or to just keep doing the job that you'd been doing, which had just got a whole lot more difficult?
Well, I felt like there's no way to turn our back to the people otherwise we were supposed to help and protect. And that it was 100 times more complicated. But at the same time, I saw a moment of change, a moment of opportunity at the same time, that we are committed to be breaking away from this culture of aid dependency, from this culture of corruption, and from insecurity. And that also was a positive factor to continue in.
Those things you mentioned are the big picture. That is what you want Afghanistan to be more self-sufficient, to be less reliant on aid. That is completely understandable. But right now there is an acute problem of people without food and shelter, malnutrition, it's wintertime, all of these things. And you've got an international community that is still reluctant to deal directly with the Taliban, which now governs Afghanistan. You can understand that, right? You can understand the reluctance. How do you get around it?
That we appreciate their assistance and that there's a need, a desperate need for the people to be fed, and that's a global responsibility, and that we provided the access, and that we ensure that the new authorities understand the importance of this humanitarian aid, and also the understanding that feeding the people is the de facto authorities' responsibility, and that the interim government understands the importance of aid, and that the people are desperate, and that we need to deliver basic services like education, like health, and that the international community's role is understood, and the UN, the partnership with the UN is understood, and that we are delivering on the commitments to ensure that there's security, there's safety, there's impartiality, there's no discrimination in distribution of aid, and that the understanding that the aid is not channeled at the moment through the government systems. And that we also do monitoring and to ensure there's no corruption and that there's no mismanagement and that we benefit, the system benefit from the international aid in a manner that the procurement is done locally and that there's enough liquidity in the system to deliver. So these have been the agendas for the last 6 months.
What happened to the Afghanistan Relief Fund, which Pakistan talked about setting up? And they were saying if countries want to donate, they can donate through us and we will make sure the money gets to the right people. What's happened with that? And is that the model which you think will work going forward, for the interim at least?
We appreciate the generosity by our neighbouring countries, many of them offering support, but Afghanistan has changed. The capacity that we have is still in the country, and that the systems which are there, and that the international community's representation by the UN is there, and that we manage these agendas domestically, and that the OIC committed a trust fund in Pakistan during their conference in Pakistan. And that Pakistanis also have been helpful, the same way Iranians and Chinese and rest of our neighbors. But more than that, we require access to trade and to do more businesses with our neighbors. And that their capacity in delivering humanitarian assistance is limited. And that also we do a lot of procurement from Central Asia, from South Asia. But we also understand that humanitarian is not enough, and that we have to move beyond humanitarian, and that we have to do economic recovery, and that we have to protect people's livelihoods.
Which is what Afghanistan was trying to do for 20 years, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And that, of course, in an insecure, in a conflict-affected situation, in a situation where we couldn't, the cost of development was high, the security premium to development was high, there was unpredictable situation, and that we didn't have political stability. So to that end, it's now changed. This seems to be more conducive now.
Really? I was going to say, when you said there wasn't political stability, I was thinking, well, isn't there a lack of political stability now, at least when it comes to Afghanistan dealing with the rest of the world?
Absolutely. That's a prerequisite, and that the politicians have to look into it, and that is important, and also equally is a corruption-free environment, which wasn't the case in the previous system, and that the security, the access, wasn't there. So these two prerequisites, even if the government is under sanction, and that the money is at the moment not channeled through the system, through the budget, but the private sector. The authorities are very private sector friendly, and that we recognize the role of market, and that the market can create jobs, the market can deliver on trade and transit, and the market can protect, can do SMEs and the agriculture sector and the mining sector. So those comes handy to do a private sector led recovery, and then followed by connectivity and trade facilitation with India, with Pakistan. With India, of course, that's one of our largest importers. We export to India a lot. And with Iran and rest of the Central Asian countries. And that's Afghanistan's comparative advantage between Central Asia and South Asia in the long term. But as you said, at the moment, we focus on humanitarian and humanitarian plus some sort of initiatives to protect people's livelihoods and sustain their resilience, and that feeding people is not sustainable, and that we need to ensure that we start development projects, and that also we have to break away from this culture of dependency.
Yeah.
We have to focus on real self-sufficiency, and that it's going to be painful. It's going to be requiring a lot of patience. But the way forward is to build build the Afghan economy based on solid foundations, not on a foundation similar to what it was with 75% of dependency, and that an international aid regime collapsing. It should never ever happen to any other country. That was cruel, that was unjust, unfair. to the people of Afghanistan, and that they failed the international community to de-link politics from economics.
Which is actually what I'm going to do right now and go back to politics and economics. I want to address the $7 billion question. The $7 billion which the United States from the Afghan Central Bank had frozen in New York. President Biden signs an executive order and says half's going to go to Afghanistan and half is going to go to the families of 9/11 victims. I dare say you'd be very pleased with $3.5 billion, but are you disappointed about the other $3.5 billion, or that this money which came from the Afghan Central Bank isn't being returned in whole to the country?
The reserve was not supposed to be disbursed anyway. That is the backup, and that is the backbone of the Afghan currency, and that it was deposited for a purpose, and that we do banking functions using those assets abroad, and that they are frozen now, which is unfortunate, and that there is some parts of it is subject to litigation in the U.S. courts, and that we believe that a decision in the favor of Afghan people is made, and that is we also sacrifice with the victims of September 11. The executive order doesn't suggest that the money go to the victims. It's subject to the further legal processes.
Right.
And the remaining 3.5 also to be used for banking purposes. It's not the money to be disbursed for humanitarian purposes.
Right.
It's not the money to be disbursed in the first place. Mm. And that those are reserves, and that we will do international correspondent banking with the international community and for the trading purposes.
And how much of a difference will that make? What can be done with that? How significant can that sum be to the system that you described?
That's absolutely vital. That will ensure liquidity. That will ensure a smooth trade. That we need to be paying businesses abroad for imports of basic commodities allowed by the U.S. Treasury and by those for the licenses, and those are not being sanctioned, like food, like fuel, like gas, and that, those items are desperately needed, and that those functions of the central bank without the reserves are impossible. Mm. So we are looking forward that the mechanism is being designed that the central bank have access to those reserves. But that doesn't necessarily mean disbursing those assets.
So let's look forward, as we try to keep doing. Politically speaking, there is still work to be done when it comes to the international community recognizing the Taliban as the rulers of Afghanistan. How do you work around that in the meantime? While all that political, because you were talking about decoupling politics and economics, so while all that political situation is going on there, how difficult or otherwise is it for you to get people, countries, and financial institutions to take part in the Afghan economy effectively?
It's in their best interest to continue their engagement and to pay their dues to the people of Afghanistan affected by the years of war and in poverty and conflict and drought, and that otherwise, if the situation is not maintained inside the Afghan territory, people will be forced to leave their country, their homes.
Is that what you say to them? Do you say that it's in your best interests?
It's in the best interests of Afghans.
Oh,
it's in the best interests of the international system that we work together, and that the services are being provided to the people, and that in a dignified manner, and that the humanitarian assistance is important, and that the guarantees that the money is not transferred to the government systems, and that we also have to work together to move beyond the humanitarian narrative to do some basic economics, like agriculture, like roads, like schools, like hospitals. And those also requires mutual understanding, and as I said, delinking politics from economics, and that the beneficiary of those services, whether functioning banks, functional Ministry of Finance, a functional passport office, and a healthcare system, is directly benefiting the people of Afghanistan.
And are they responsive to you? positively responsive, these institutions and banks and countries?
They unfortunately have not moved beyond the humanitarian agenda,
right,
in that they have politicized the aid regime, and that they didn't stay to protect some of the gains that we together otherwise have achieved in the financial sector and the, in the public services sector, and in the Afghan economy. So to that end, we also realize the harsh realities, and that we have to start afresh and to break away from this culture of dependency and to use it as an opportunity. Mm. It's going to be painful, it's going to be difficult, but we have to believe and deliver on a real self-reliance, and that we have the potentials. The younger generation of Afghanistan should provide it with the opportunity to deliver differently.
Mm.
Some blame goes to the international community, the way they handled Afghanistan last 20 years, and that a lot of blame goes to elites, to the politicians who failed Afghanistan, who failed elections, who rigged elections, and at the same time who didn't invest in youths, and that they played ethnic politics, divisions, and then at the same time they failed to deliver on the economy, as well as they failed the peace process eventually that led to the situation that we are now. And that, of course, requires a fresh breath and a fresh start, and that also corruption-free and more stabilized political system to ensure that there's guarantees to the economic.
And you think all of those qualities exist in the youth of Afghanistan?
Those qualities exist in the youth of Afghanistan, but unfortunately, and I can't blame them for leaving the country due to the uncertainty and that political failures associated with the leaders before the Taliban, and that the international community also had to be held responsible for some of their complications that they didn't help Afghans through a peace process where things could have been much different.
And I guess the best way of holding them responsible, as you say, is getting them to step up now.
Is getting them to step up, and that
because backwards blaming isn't going to do anything now, is it? It's got to be something positive and something constructive.
And that they have started stepping up in economic, humanitarian front, in economic front, and that the narrative is that we will engage.
Mm.
And engagement doesn't necessarily mean recognition, as they believe, but that engagement is constructive. As I said, it's in the best interest of the people of Afghanistan and the best interest of the international community. And that we need to work together to change the course of history. We are beautifully strategically located between Central Asia and South Asia. Central Asia rich of potential natural resources, and South Asia in need of those. Every single electricity transmission project between the two subcontinents must pass through Afghanistan.
Come through Afghanistan.
And the large projects, including gas pipelines and fiber optics and cargoes and so forth and so on. And that the Afghanistan's own natural resources, estimated at around $1 trillion, could be a potential. But at the heart of this, as you said, is political stability. Otherwise, the capacity is there, the commitment is there, the potentials are there, and also the lessons learned are there. And those are very vital. We would never, ever again allow that degree of aid dependency and that degree of fragmentation and aid conditionality that led to this situation where the entire economy was at the verge of collapse. And a number of us tried to preserve some of the systems. We have now a functional budget system, and that we have a centralized revenue collection system, and that we have revived the banks, and that it's functional. And we are hoping that we build on these, and that we build our homogeneous, endogenous systems, and that we are no longer that dependent to the international system.
Nazir Kabiri, Afghanistan's Deputy Finance Minister, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you. Appreciate it.